gaining life is not enough. If you're saying, I want to gain life to make the game go long, you have to then have a reason for the game to go long. And the reason for the game to go long cannot just be, my pest mascot is a 7-8 now. We are returning to the Archetype Architecture series, part 2, looking at the much maligned, much misunderstood, and much underperforming black-green in Limited.
Green and black are just diametrically opposed to each other in the types of games they typically want to play, like as colors in the color pair.
So that's why we're sort of coming into it with a like, black-green doesn't usually work, because that's what we're shown, is that black-green doesn't usually work. So we will have a lot of information about when it doesn't work, and we'll have some information about when it really seems to succeed and try and draw some conclusions from that.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to not just another episode of Lords of Limited. We've got another throwback from the Paternity Chronicles here. My name is Ben Warning, and joining me on the line, as always, is Ethan, The Rock Sacks, and his millions.
The Rock came out to surprise the millions.
Jabroni, know your role. See, I know all the Rock phrases.
Yeah, love it.
Is that true that the Rock deck was named for Dwayne the Rock Johnson?
Absolutely, yeah.
That's crazy. I never knew that.
So there was a deck in 1999-ish. Sol Maka was the deck designer. And the Rock was Deranged Hermit, which was a very old card. It's 3GG for a 1/1. And when it comes into play, it brings 4 squirrel tokens and it gives all squirrels +1/+1, which sounds absolutely broken for 5 mana, and it is. But it has Echo, which means that during your upkeep after it comes into play, you have to pay the Echo cost. You have to pay its casting cost again or sacrifice it. And then the next game plan was to loop Deranged Hermits with Diabolic Servitude. So that's a 3 and a black enchantment. When it comes into play, you choose a creature in your graveyard and put that creature into play. And when the chosen creature is put into a graveyard, you remove the creature from the game. It's like you basically just get to cast multiple Deranged Hermits. And then you have Phyrexian Plague Lord as like kind of a machine gun sack outlet type deal. So this was 3 black for a 4/4. You could sack the Phyrexian Plague Lord itself to give something -4/-4 until end of turn. But it also had the ability to sacrifice a creature to give target creature -1/-1 until end of turn. So you had those squirrels to throw as machine guns. So this deck was named after Dwayne the Rock Johnson because Deranged Hermit was the Rock, and the squirrels that he brought were his millions. Dwayne the Rock Johnson and his millions.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. The history lesson. I love it. I love it. I'm very excited to be talking about black-green. I had a lot of feelings about this archetype as I was like doing my deep dive. I had a lot of feelings when I was reading through like your notes about what black-green usually does in Limited, and a sort of like wrestling with my own proclivities of like, why am I always inclined to like this color pair, despite how often it has used, abused, and I have misused it in the past, you know? Like, and maybe we'll dig into that a little deeper, but this archetype appeals to me, it appeals to my sensibilities, but it does not often deliver.
Yeah, it does not appeal to me and does not often deliver.
Like, I feel like be nice for you.
I feel like green black and limited has the same problem as green black and cube, which is just like the other colors just get to do it better most of the time.
Yeah. And we will look into why that is and how we can, as we're often trying to do in this series, or what I'm hoping to come away from the series with the ability to do, is to have the tools to look at a card preview file before playing with the cards and more properly be able to predict the success of colors and color pairs. So we are going to dig into all of that for green-black today. Let's do a little Patreon check-in. Patreon.com/Lords of Limited is where folks can go to give back to the show if they so choose. The show is always free, but we have some great perks over at the Patreon page. Two things we always want to shout out. One is access to our Discord, which is just an amazing community of like-minded, limited individuals. I know this will be in the far distant past, but Ben just dropped not one, but 2 invitations to do practice draft pods of the Lords of Limited Cube exclusive to our Discord. So that's very exciting. The one pod that I would have been able to attend already filled up. There's already two people on the waiting list. So I will just have to bide my time, or maybe I'll just create my own pod at a time where I could attend.
There you go.
Bring seven people along with me. But anyway, the Discord is awesome. And at a higher reward tier, you get access to our podcast feed, where you get not only this episode a day early ad free, but also access to our weekly bonus episode of Lords Unlimited. So if any or all that sounds of interest to you, head on over to the Patreon page. And we just want to make sure that we're shouting out our past, present, and future patrons during these Paternity Chronicle episodes. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. We really appreciate your support.
Truly cannot say thank you enough.
Support for today's episode comes from Square, the business platform that helps sellers become neighborhood favorites. Whether you're gearing up for a busy season or just trying to keep up with everyday demand, Square keeps your business running smoothly, from payments and POS to online orders, inventory, staff, and more, all in one place so you can focus on your customers, not your to-do list. There are a lot of cash-only businesses in my neighborhood, and I will say that a hole-in-the-wall, cash-only pizza place that's still kicking definitely piques my interest. If it's this outdated, it has to be good. But what's even better is when they make transactions easier for their customers with a platform like Square. I was so thrilled the other day when I went on a walk with my son, and we popped into a coffee shop down the street and saw that they had switched from cash-only to using Square. And Jonah was especially happy because that meant that his I never carry cash dad could buy a muffin for him. Square now offers three clear plans: free, plus, and premium, so you can pick the tools you need and grow into more when you're ready. Whether you're starting out or growing fast, their plans are designed to be simple, transparent, and flexible, and the team at Square will be there to help you along the way. Square helps you run your business more smoothly, bringing payments, operations, and insights together in one place so you're ready for whatever's next. Right now, listeners can get up to $200 off Square hardware when you sign up at square.com/go/LOL. That's SQUARE.com/go/LOL. Get started with Square and build a setup that works the way you do.
So, black-green mid-range, the ultimate mid-range deck, the ultimate mid-range strategy. Why doesn't it work?
Ultimately, green and black are just diametrically opposed to each other in the types of games they typically want to play, like as colors in the color pair.
Just to sort of zoom out about the context of what we're looking at all the sets in the play booster era, all of the regular sets in the play booster era. Have not included Strixhaven, but spoiler alert for everybody following along at home, green-black didn't do too hot in Secrets of Strixhaven either. But looking at this under the lens of the sets of the past, 2.5 years now, green-black brings up the rear quite often. It is often in the bottom, certainly in the bottom half of archetypes very often, and in a few instances on the actual bottom of the 10 archetypes. And this is based on win rates from all players and top players on 17 lands. That's where we're gathering this information from, but we're going to do our own extrapolating from said rankings. So that's why we're sort of coming into it with a black green doesn't usually work, because that's what we're shown, is that black green doesn't usually work. So we will have a lot of information about when it doesn't work, and we'll have some information about when it really seems to succeed and try and draw some conclusions from that. So what can we talk about black-green and just sort of a general sense of what it gets to do in limited?
I mean, as broad strokes, if you think green-black, the number one thing that comes to mind is green-black mid-range, right? That is it. Green-black is the rock. It's core game plan. It's also wild that the rock name is living on 25 plus years later.
Does it live on with us dinosaurs, or does it actually live on?
I think more than 50% of Magic players get that reference.
Okay. Let us know.
Green black is the rock. And traditionally rock decks or mid-range decks want to trade 2-for-1 grind value, 2-for-1 your opponent to death. It doesn't quite work out that way in limited, though, because almost everything is mid-range and limited. But if black-green is the king of mid-range and everything is mid-range and limited, why isn't it good?
Well, let me read off to you the WotC-branded archetype titles for black-green from the Play Booster era.
Okay.
From Lorwyn Eclipse, we had Elves. Avatar the Last Stand, Airbender, they said it was +1/+1 counters, which I guess was earthbending. Then we rattle off Graveyard from Edge of Eternities.
Graveyard
Graveyard for Edge of Eternities. Graveyard Value for Final Fantasy. Tarkir Dragonstorm was counters for black green as like the core of the two wedges, and that's why we sort of largely left Tarkir Dragonstorm out of the conversation because it was a three color set. Aether Drift, coming back at you, Graveyard. Foundations, Morbid. Duskmourne, Delirium Grind. Bloomborough, Food Midrange. OTJ, or Outlaws of Thunder Junction, Creatures in the Graveyard. And Murders at Karlov Manor, Grave Break. So, our graveyard stuff joke seems to be pretty apt when we describe what black green does.
And I think sometimes that works, but more often than not, it does not. Usually it feels like this graveyard stuff is slapped on as an afterthought, rather than lots of intricate planning going into, can we make this work and can we give it the tools to succeed?
Well, and that might be because of, you know, when did this first start, this idea of the spectrum of colors? I think it was Neon Dynasty when we first were like, this set lives on a sort of continuum of, on one pole you have artifacts matter with red, on the other pole you have enchantments matter with green. In the middle was, I forget what we decided, black, I think, because blue leaned more artifacts, white leaned more enchantments. But thinking about this continuum of how the colors relate to one another, it feels like set after set, you just think green and black are just on, they are the two poles of that spectrum.
But also frequently, when combined, are on an island, because they only do the one thing. Like they do right. The graveyard stuff, and no other color pair is usually doing the graveyard stuff along with black or green.
Correct. Yes, yes, yes.
So we've got the Graveyard Matters theme. Occasionally, you get a reanimator variant that actually works in there, which Ikoria came to mind for this for mm-hmm. me. So you had, in that format, you had stuff that self-cycled, like Titanoth Rex. This was a 7GG 11-11 trampler with cycling one in a green. When you cycled it, you could put a trample counter on target creature you control. There was also Void Beckoner, which was another giant thing that cycled itself. And then you had two premium reanimate spells. One, the Gold Signpost in Back for More, 4 black green for an instant, return target creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield. And then it also fights up to one target creature you don't control. Plus Unbreakable Bond, which is 4 and a black for a sorcery, return a creature from your graveyard to the battlefield with a lifelink counter on it. So two things. One, we see the gold uncommon being great there. And I think we're going to see a correlation when green-black gets gold uncommons. It often does way better. And not just getting them, but getting good ones.
Correct.
But secondly, I was like, I kind of have this vague memory of Reanimator working in IKO. And I Googled that. Google AI spit out like a near perfect rundown of what green-black wanted to do as an archetype while quoting your Cardsphere articles. The future is coming for us in a hurry. Like I just slopped in the search engine, like green-black reanimator in Ikoria, ? Did this work?
I can't tell if that means I have job security or if AI is coming for my job. I'm not quite sure which that means. Yes, we will see this exact like kind of representation in Aether Drift of like, you've got, what was it? Thundering Brood Wagon, the signpost there. Cycled, and then there was a reanimate spell that was one of the best uncommons in that set too. So that little package really proves to boost up this archetype.
But I think generally in the Graveyard Matter stuff, you're going to see it like that self-cycling reanimate stuff is an outlier. Generally, you're going to see graveyard stuff work when green and black get good self mill tools. I think that is the key there. The other thing you're frequently going to see from green black as a color pair, and we heard that in the archetype rundown, is +1/+1 counters. I think this is one of the other go-tos if they're not going to make it graveyard X, is +1/+1 counters.
The problem is that black doesn't play in that space the same way that green does often, right? Like when I think of +1/+1 counters as a theme, green white comes to mind. Like I feel like green and white both do the same thing of like, I'm going tall, I'm getting aggressive. Black usually wants to like, I'm a 1/1 and I come in and I put a counter over there and then I'm over here to sacrifice myself. Like black is using it more as like rectangles or value pieces than
you
green
want to put a +1/+1 counter on something and then get it to die also. Correct. Like can you check both of these boxes in sequential order?
Yeah, so the +1/+1 counter thing, I feel like in theory and does seems like it'll work, but in practice often falls flat.
also the plus one counter thing is usually extremely vulnerable to interacting with key creatures. And if your key creatures die, often the whole strategy falls apart and unravels very quickly. The last kind of thing that we see is death matters for black green, where you're wanting things to die, but frequently it's from your side of the battlefield and on your turn. Mm-hmm. And white black also gets to do this, and which also generally doesn't work out for white black usually. But white black at least has smaller stuff to sacrifice. Like green black, it's so rare for it to have trinkety things to throw away to die on your turn. Like you also have to, and then you have to find the sac outlets, or you have to get your opponent to trade in combat, but your opponent has a lot of agency over whether they trade in combat. It's just tough to get things to die on your board, your side of the board, after you have the payoff on the board. And also you generally don't want to lose your board once you've built a board. Like that's just a not ideal thing.
Green just so rarely provides tools for the sacrifice life. Like at least white is like, I can make some tokens. Green so rarely, like the honestly, I'm like, when's the last time it happened? Like Saprolings and Dominaria, like, and then green black sacrifice was like, or not, it was just really green black Saprolings in that format, but that was one of the better decks in that set. But like green doesn't often bring sacrificable things to the party in that way.
Right, but I think it's interesting that you noted that it kind of worked when it was called Green Black Saprolings, and it kind of worked in Lorwyn when it was called Green Black Elves. Like when there's some forethought put into, can we marry green and black being fundamentally opposed to each other? Like the archetype generally works, but they have to do some work for that to be the case.
Correct.
So as far as when green black is good, what does it get? What does it do well? I think in general, it's going to get great rate creatures that do more without work than what the other pairs, other color pairs get to do. So green just gets a 4-mana 4/4 reach trample. The other color pairs maybe have to do work to get their creatures that big or that effective. And I think this idea that when it's good, you don't have to do work is supported by the fact that bottom players win more when black green is good. Like bottom players are winning more than top players. You're just getting great rate cards that do the thing and that are hard to mess up them being good.
Yes.
It also generally tends to have creatures that line up well against the removal options in the format. So going back again to maybe 3 and a G for a 4/4 trample reach, and red gets 1 and a red deal 3, and white gets a thing that's deal 3 to an attacking or blocking creature, and black gets -3/-3 at instant speed. Like your stuff is just like a scotch bigger, like your stuff hits the magic number of toughness to dodge the removal. That also is a big deal. And then it also typically has great options for removal on its side. So frequently when green black is good, the green fight spell is good, complemented with black having good interaction as well.
Right. I'm curious. I was trying to tease out some trends from the green and black removal, and maybe we'll get to dig into that together and you can see if you can find anything that is a tie that binds there.
Yeah. And then on the opposite side, when it struggles, it's frequently the converse. Either its core strategy mechanic is easily disrupted by removal from the opponent, like some key creatures can get taken out and you fall apart, or it's just unsupported and they didn't put the graveyard support in for what is supposed to be a Graveyard Matters deck. Specifically, a lack of quality self-mill is generally going to really hurt it. I think another thing that green-black really suffers from is it's incapable of double spelling effectively quite often. Like I feel like green-black's power tends to come at the 4 and 5 mana value slot, which frequently makes it feel pretty clunky as the pilot.
That is something I hadn't considered, but tracks with the few times we've seen green black be successful. Like I'm already thinking of like, well, green black and Aether Drift got Stampeding Scurryfoot, the single green 1/1 that then got to exhaust later on to make a 3/3 and get a counter on itself. It had Grim Bauble as a 1-mana removal spell. So like green black getting cheap tools, you think about Lorwyn Eclipsed, things like Scarblade Scout, the 2/2 lifelinker that milled 2, Morkin's Eyes, the 2-mana enchantment that was such a boon to like surveil and then dump a bunch of elves onto the battlefield. Like those are some powerhouse cheap plays that green black doesn't often get a hold of.
Yeah. And I think the last thing is just if its gold cards aren't good, it's going to struggle generally.
Yeah, this was one of the big things that we'll see from just the top sets and the bottom sets that we're going to take a look at, is when one of Green Black's like signposts is a sideways build around, that's pretty brutal. That when you're like, you're like, here's one of your signposts, here's one of your air quotes reasons to draft this deck, and it's kind of a do nothing unless the pieces come together and other colors get cards that require little to no work, or are like, you know, payoffs and enablers in themselves for whatever that archetype is trying to do. That's just such a massive chasm to overcome.
Yep.
So the big thesis for me, and you already said this, but just to underline it, is that like green black struggles inherently because the colors are diametrically opposed. They are on the opposite end of whatever this color continuum is. Their game plans are not aligned. And so in order for them to be aligned, a lot of thought and care has to be put into how those how those colors are comprised in the set. And I think we'll see some pretty, obviously small sample size, but some pretty key, like, oh, when this card works, these kinds of cards exist in the set. Or when this color pair works, rather, these kinds of cards are in the set. When this color pair doesn't work, these kinds of cards are in the set. Or these kinds of cards are not present. And I think that's going to be, there were some pretty stark examples of that when I was going through the card files. And then just to dial in on what we mean by green and black existing on opposite ends of the spectrum, one of the things I was thinking about was like the size of the game they want to play. You know, black is often trying to, we've already talked about what's black doing. It's using its resources in multiple ways. It's sacrificing board presence. It's obviously utilizing the graveyard in some ways. It's often wanting to keep the, when we talk about the size of the game, big game versus small game, black wants to play a small game. I'm going to reduce the cards in your hand. I'm going to reduce the things on board with my removal, that sort of thing. And green never is doing that, almost. Like, green is trying to play to the board. My stuff is bigger than yours. I'm going to get you dead by attacking you with my creatures. And black is often trying to go in the back door sometimes.
Or ramp, get more lands on the battlefield, sure. Spend more mana every turn than you do. Like, green is the definition of wanting to play a bigger game.
And so then we'll see maybe how trends work in terms of when the marriage between the colors seems harmonious and when more often than not it doesn't. And what one color is bringing to the party. Like, is one color acquiescing to the other color's game plan, or do they meet in the middle? Like, what do you think is happening when we look at the sets that succeed? And I guess we can talk about what sets we're going to be looking at. The sets where black green was the best, or where black green was in the top of the heap, we had Lorwyn Eclipsed. We're going to be looking at that, the black green elves deck. We've alluded to this already. We're going to be looking at black green and Aether Drift. And those were the two clear ones. The third one we're going to be looking at is black green and Outlaws of Thunder Junction, where it was ranked fifth, but the gap between those color pairs is pretty low. And I think green black fits into the mold of what we're looking at in that set. And then we sort of had our dealer's choice of which bottom sets to look at. We're going to be looking at Edge of Eternities, where black green was 10th, Foundations, where black green was 10th, and Murders at Karlov Manor, where black green was 9th. Though this was a surprise to me, because in my memory, I was like, as I was going through, I was like, well, surely green black was good in Murders, like Insidious Roots, the Leave the Graveyard stuff.
It was.
No, it wasn't.
It was. Bad. You could draft that deck.
It was fun. It was fun, but was it good?
I crushed at one of our Thursday PT drafts with with an Insidious Roots deck. One of the things we were talking about before the show is that when green and black are a color pair, I don't ever think that it's black base and green as a support color. Like, I almost always think of green black as a green deck that black is fitting into. But I think when it's at its best, it truly is green black supported, like focused, doing this thing. Like, green black elves, like both colors were working towards the elves game plan in green black graveyard when the graveyard supported Aether Drift. Like, both of them are working towards, we've got self-mill, we've got these tools to do the graveyard stuff. I do truly think when it works, it is a marriage of the two colors rather than one being stronger than the other.
Yeah, and that kind of bears out, you know, certainly if you're just looking at top cards in the set by game and hand win rate. Like, if black-green is a good archetype in a format, it's not like it's then, well, if I sort by top uncommons, it's all green cards. Like, it's a mix. And obviously there's some sort of like, there's data bias, something, I'm out of my depths at this point when I'm talking about it, stuff that's happening there. If like, if black green is good, then it's going to pull up the stats of those cards, whatever. But it didn't seem weighted in that sense to me of like, well, it's always this, or it's always that, it's always green being good, or it's always black being good, or whatever. Let's look at Edge of Eternities, for example. Blue green ranked first, green white ranked second, red green ranked fifth, black green ranked 10th. Like, when black green isn't good in a set, it's almost always the worst of the four green decks. Green can only do so much to pull up black in that sense. If green is good, it doesn't necessarily mean that black green will be good.
Correct.
Yeah. So we'll be looking at what those outliers are. So let's do a little memory lane, a little big picture story going down these six sets. Maybe what we remember, what sort of jogs the memory before we dive into some card specifics. So black green and Lorwyn eclipsed. Elves was just far and away the best deck in the format by the end of it.
Yeah, I think just had way more support than the other color pairs and got to play a great early game while also having an inevitable late game thanks to Morkan's Eyes, had the most juiced rares. Like, it just was clearly the most supported deck.
For sure. And we'll talk about what support means for black green in terms of, like, you know, if you'll remember from our blue red series, and I think we'll do this throughout, of like, what are sort of archetypal kinds of cards that these colors or color pairs get, and are they present in the set? And if so, like, how important is it to this deck success? You've alluded to Self Mill. That's going to be one of the big ones. But one of the things I noticed in Lorwyn Eclipsed was, not only does it get like some kind of secret gold cards, like Dundoolin Weaver is a Kithkin, right? The 1 and a green 2/1 Kithkin. That's just a good green card. Comes into play, and if you have two other creatures or three total creatures, you get to return a permanent from your graveyard to the battlefield. But even though it's a Kithkin, works real nice in Elves, doesn't it, with all that self-mill. The two artifacts that I know were the bane of your existence in that set, Gathering Stone and Dawnblessed Pennant, yeah, they're colorless. They're the best in Elves, because Gathering, like, the surveil aspect of Gathering Stone, the creature density of the Elves deck, made Gathering Stone at its best in green-black. Dawnblessed Pennant, again, the graveyard aspect, the self-mill aspect, made Dawnblessed Pennant the best in Elves deck. Plus, it did the, like, infinite combo with Tristan's Command as just a cherry on top. So not only is it, like, supported with, hey, you've got your Eclipsed Elf, you've got your Morkan's Loyalist as your great signposts, you've also got Morkan's Eyes, which, yeah, it's a green card, but that's an Elves card. And then you've got colorless cards that, yeah, they're colorless, but they're best in Elves. That really boosts up the power level of the archetype.
Well, and one of the things that you're seeing there, that I don't know if it was a specific thing that you took a look at or not, but you're seeing black-green, which is a color pair that doesn't normally get sustained sources of card advantage.
Or selection.
Right. Yeah. Get sustained sources of card advantage. Like, usually it's a 2-for-1 here, a 2-for-1 there. Like, those artifacts that you're talking about are ways to recoup and reuse over and over and over.
Absolutely. Aether Drift, this is the most, like, green is good set that we're looking at. Green was present in 4 of the top 5 performing decks in the format. Black-green's cards were just the best cards, and its two signposts were very strong. You had the Thundering Brood Wagon. That was the vehicle that came in and destroyed something mana value 4 or less. And then it also had, I'm forgetting the name of it, it had the Broodheart engine, which was the surveil engine, and then also could reanimate something. And those two worked in tandem together, right? Because you could cycle the Brood Wagon and then get it back with the Broodheart engine. And so there were also a redundancy of recursion there. But the presence of a card like Pothole Mole seems massive in the success of black green as an archetype. This is 2 and a green for a 2/3. When it enters, mill 3 cards and then put a land from among them, or from your graveyard, depending on if it's this or Patient Naturalist, from your graveyard back into your hand. Green bringing stuff to the self-mill party is huge for this color pair to succeed.
Well, because typically that's also, One of the things we said was that Black Green, despite being on opposite ends of the spectrum, is also frequently on an island as its own archetype. Mm-hmm. Usually you're those green self-mill cards are going to be cards that are going to be going a little bit later that are the best in your deck. Like, I think about Patient Naturalist. Like, I remember when we were doing the previews for OTJ, and like, I'm sure I had Patient Naturalist as my top green common because I love a value card like that. But that wasn't actually green's best game plan. Like, green's best game plan was beating down and having overly statted creatures in OTJ. But because you get this premium card for your archetype in green, like, can any green deck play Patient Naturalist? Yes. Is it going to be absolutely at its best in green black? Also, yes.
Right. That's the key. Is like, Patient Naturalist, green white was the best deck, air quotes, in Outlaws of Thunder Junction, which is the third
set. You wouldn't even really want a Patient Naturalist in green white.
Exactly. But its existence in the set allows green black to not be in 10th of the archetypes, you know?
Yes.
So Outlaws of Thunder Junction, another set where we see strong self mill. We see oversized green creatures. We see tons of recursion. Not only are we going to see recursion in green and black, and the green black signpost of Honest Rutstein, which was absolutely nuts. That's the one black green 3/2. It's a Gravedigger, and it makes your creatures one mana cheaper. We're also just seeing a prevalence of, like, not only just big dumb things, but big dumb things that provide a little value, whether that's Cactarantula being hard to target without you, like, hard to kill without you drawing a card, Spinewood's Paladin as a 5-mana 5/4, gain 3 life, Outcaster Greenblade, the best uncommon in that set, as the 3-mana 1/2 that grew for every desert you controlled and searched up a desert, like, excellent tools to make the game go long. And the game going long, maybe that's more of the, like, big game, small game thing. But the more green wants to make the game go long, I feel like that's more where black's like, oh, I can hang. I can be a part of that game plan, you know?
Yes, absolutely. I think that's the thing to me. Like, you had put, I think I was conflating controlling with length of game. And it's not necessarily like black can control the game in terms of forcing it to be a small game, or it can just play a longer game alongside green. And I think that's when they really cooperate, is when they're both just trying to play a longer game and have the tools to win a longer game against the blue decks. Like, frequently blue gets to win the late game. And I think when that's not true and green black can hang in the late game, that's when you're in a good spot for green and black as a color pair.
Which brings us to the other side of the coin, the more often seen side of the coin, which is when black green does not succeed. So we look at Foundations. And black and green were, like, already doing very different things in a sort of an essential sense. But then in this set are, like, elves and zombies. Black, I was looking through the green cards. I was like, oh, yeah, elves. Ah, black usually gets elves, right? Black's going to bring some elves to the... No, there's one elf, Infestation Sage, the single black 1/1 that dies into a 1/1 flyer. And then the green cards that sort of fit black's game plan of, like, he doesn't want the game to go long. It doesn't. It had Elvish Regrower as the sort of, I don't know, Gravedigger variant, but interesting that it was in green, not black. And Treetop Snare Spinner as the common 4-mana 1/4 reach, death touch, put a counter on a creature you control for 3 mana as a sorcery. So, like, yeah, you could make the game go long, but it's not going to be great. And the main mechanic was morbid here. The, like, I care about stuff dying on my turn. The support is just not there. Like, there's one free repeatable sack outlet, and green brings no real sack fodder to the table.
Well, I think one other thing that sticks out to me from Foundations, just from my memory, is what we talked about with the clunk factor. Like, both those cards that you said there fit black's game plan are 4-drops. And yeah. Black had a good curve when you paired it with white, but all of a sudden when you were trying to do what black green wanted to do, you were playing expensive, clunky cards that were answerable by the other color pairs.
You're making me think of something that is like your idea of when I think of green black, I think of green decks with some black support. I was thinking of Elves from Lorwyn Eclipsed. I was thinking of Aether Drift. I was thinking of OTJ. And that feels, I was like, those are black green decks. Black is doing, like, they feel fused together. But when it doesn't work, when they don't fuse together, it almost always feels like I'm a green deck with black removal.
Yes.
Which is like, well, so you're just a green deck. And, like, you're not getting anything because the signpost is bad or whatever. Like, they're not really in conversation together. And it's because, like, this is a textbook example, because you're like, well, if you're going to be green black, you either have to be a black deck with some green cards or a green deck with some black cards.
Yes. And neither one of those is good, because the other color pairs get to have an identity and do a thing and have their cards married together.
Correct.
Or in dialogue with each other, as the cube heads like to say.
There we go. Edge of Eternities is just another example of black and green at opposite ends of the spectrum. This was like another classic, like small creatures, sacrifice and value in black, green playing lots of large monsters. And I think this was even exacerbated by Station and Spacecraft. Like, green decks got to use Station very well, because you could, you know, get your large monster, your Germinating Worm in for a turn and then have 5 power to station something. Black didn't have that. You had Perigee Beckoner. That was about it. In black, like, if you didn't have those, you could not station in black decks. And the sort of value cards, or cards that said, hey, I'd like the game to go long, from green, didn't really exist. You had Galactic Wayfarer as like, but like every deck wanted that. And you had Edge Rover, I guess, the single green 2/2 reach that died into a lander for both players. And the main mechanic here is graveyard, with no way really to get any cards into the graveyard.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you what green-black signpost was. I think that's also a good indicator of when green-black is good, if I remember what the signpost is or not.
I mean, it's a good card. Seed Chip Broodtender, the black-green 2/3. When it enters, mill 3, and you can pay 3 black-green to sack it to return a creature spacecraft from your graveyard to the battlefield. And there's only one other way to self-mill, and that's Fel Grabship, the spacecraft that milled 3 and then returned something. Like, And a pretty massive difference, I'll say, from something like this. Like, this is not a Gravedigger. And we'll look at Gravediggers as a category. This is not a Gravedigger. Like, Gravedigger needs to affect the board in some way when it comes in. And this just doesn't.
Yep.
Lastly, Murders at Karlov Manor. This was tricky. This was the one, like, I already alluded to this being one where I was like, this has to be good, right? Because it looks well set up with the leaves, the graveyard theme. The distinct lack of self-mill, only one card in this color pair, mills incidentally, and a lot of surveil, and one of my big takeaways here is that surveil is not self-mill. Those two factors has this color pair struggling to succeed as an A+B mechanic. And I alluded to as well the, when your signpost is tied up in a sideways build around, looking at you, Insidious Roots. This is black green for an enchantment. Creature tokens you control have tap, add 1 mana of any color, and then whenever one or more cards leave your graveyard, you make a 0/1 plant token and then put a counter on each plant you control. Very cool and fun, but again, it has a fail rate of does nothing, and really just have to make sure you're like drawing that in the right conjunction with, then I have the cards that surveil and I'm surveilling the right things into the yard. And then I'm either collecting evidence or exiling stuff. And when it comes together, it's great, but the fail rate is pretty high.
Well, one of the other things also, like if we look at all of the gold cards, like Insidious Roots says, hey, here, do this thing. And there's a lot of stuff seated to do the Insidious Roots things, but the other two gold cards, Crawl Whipcracker, black green for 3/2 reach, when it enters the battlefield, destroy target token and opponent controls. That has nothing to do with what green black is trying to do, and is not a great card, because when you play it on turn 2, you played a 2-mana 3/2, which is not helping you play a long game at all. And if you wait for the value, it's also not affecting the board that much. And then its right. Other card, Rakish Scoundrel, which is 2 black green for 3/3 death touch, and when it has disguise, and when it enters return face up, target creature gains indestructible until end of turn. That neither of those have anything to do with what Insidious Roots is trying to do. And Insidious Roots is definitely that, and the collecting evidence, and what was the, there was a chalk outline, that was the other green enchantment. Like, if those other gold cards helped that stuff a little bit more, I think it would go much better towards having a more readily available sideways build around package.
This is such a great point, because when we look at the top, the signpost from the top 3, they're so clearly in harmony. You've got Honest Rutstein and Badlands Revival, which are both like, hey, you got stuff in the graveyard, it's coming back. You've got Broodheart Engine and Thundering Broodwagon from Aetherdrift, which are, hey, I can cycle into the graveyard and then this other thing can return it. So we're living that space. And the signposts from Lorwyn Eclipsed, Eclipsed Elf, just great. Morkit's Loyalist says, hey, you care about elves and bringing stuff back from the graveyard. Stoic Grove Guide as the common 5-mana 5/4 that you could exile from your yard as a 2/2 says, hey, I'm happy to be cast, or I'm happy to be milled in some way, and then I'll exist in the graveyard for you to either be returned or I can exile myself. Like, they're all clearly doing the same thing.
And you have single colored cards that are also on that same wavelength. Like, add Morkit's Eyes to that list. Like, you could list five other cards that are all pulling towards that same game plan.
Yeah, that was the other. I mean, Lauren Eclipse just was felt very cheating because it also had, I'm forgetting, Moon Vigil Adherence, the like 2GG star trample that has power and toughness equal to the number of creatures you controlled in your graveyard. And it was another like, yeah, this is a mono green card, but who are we kidding? This is actually an elf card.
Correct.
And the more of those cards that any color pair really gets, but black green certainly is helped by secret gold cards in that respect. So some interesting trends as we look at, like, what are some archetypal cards? What are cards that we often see in these color pairs or these colors individually that might lead us to have some trends? I want to save removal for the end of the conversation because I'm curious your thoughts or if you see some trends there. A big glaring thing, I was like, oh, what about a Ravenous Rats variant? The one in a black, 1/1, opponent discards a card. Very clearly, the presence of this card does not matter and might very well hinder the success of this archetype. It is present in all three of the bottom performing decks, Ravenous Rats in Foundations, Virus Beetle in Edge of Eternities, and Unscrupulous Agent in Murders at Karlov Manor. And it is not present in any of the three top decks.
Well, because that's a very good black card that has no home in green-black at all.
Green doesn't care about that card at all.
Zero, yeah.
Yeah. Self-mill, we should talk about. There is a preponderance of self-mill in the top performing. Like, this would be my biggest thing. If I'm going to take away from this episode... to go, if I'm looking at a card file for an upcoming set and I want to know if black green is going to be good, I want to see how many instances of self mill there are for that color pair. For the top three sets, there's just it in droves. You've got Midnight Tilling, Scarblade Scout, Dawnhand Eulogist from Lorwyn Eclipse. Like, and I think crucially, green has to bring a card at least to this. I alluded to Pothole Mole and Patient Naturalist from, the other two sets respectively. And then when you look at the bottom sets, Foundations has none. Black Green I said already has, or Black Green and Edge of Eternities had Fel Grabship and Seed Ship Brewtender. That's it. Aftermath Analyst as the only self mill in Murders at Karlov Manor. It's pretty stark that, like, you need that support.
Yeah. And I think most importantly, sometimes we trick ourselves looking at spoiler season with surveil cards. We're like, oh, well, black's got some surveil and you're going to be able to surveil some stuff into the graveyard to fuel your graveyard's matter stuff. Surveil is not even close to as good as self-mill.
Well, especially because, like, yes, sometimes if I want to hit a land drop, I will surveil a creature into the bin. But usually if I'm hitting my land drops and I surveil a creature, I'm going to keep that creature on top so I can draw it. And that was something that, like, the inverse is true, where the top three sets for black green, only one of them has a surveil creature from green. And the bottom three sets all have surveil creatures in green, right? Whatever, whether it's a 2-mana 3/1 that surveils, or a 3-mana 4/2 that surveils, or a 1-mana 1/1. Like, the surveilling just doesn't cut it.
Well, and not that surveilling is not good. Surveilling is inherently thing to have tacked onto a creature. It just is not enough to fuel a graveyard strategy.
Does black have a Gravedigger? Is another big, like, well, this is pretty clear. All three of the top sets, black gets a Gravedigger. Graveshifter in Lorwyn Eclipsed. Back on Track from Aetherdrift, which I'm counting as a Gravedigger, not only because it returns the thing right to the battlefield, but it does also make a 1/1 pilot along with it. And Mourner's Surprise from OTJ, which is the one in a black, return a creature from your graveyard to your hand, and then it made a 1/1 mercenary token. And you get Nada in Foundations, Edge of Eternities, or Murders. I guess you could count Elvish Regrower from Foundations, but if the question is, does black get a Gravedigger? The answer is no.
Right. Well, another one that really sticks out to me is the green protection spell. We haven't talked about that at all yet. And so green frequently gets some sort of a single green. My thing gets hexproof and plus 0+1. Sometimes it gets a counter. Sometimes it gets a whatever the royal roll or whatever it is.
Yes.
But when green can present threats that have to be answered and then can also protect them for a single mana, that is a recipe for just green to be good, but also green black in general to be good.
Yeah, I couldn't tell if this was me grasping at straws a little bit, because there's not, it's not as clear as the categories of like, is there a Ravenous Rats? Is there Self Mill? Is there a Gravedigger? Like, those are very clear. This is a little murkier, but the trends that we see in the top three sets is they all get a one mana protection spell, Blossoming Defense in Lorwyn Eclipsed, Defend the Rider in Aetherdrift, and Snakeskin Veil in OTJ. Snakeskin Veil does appear in Foundations. Murders at Karlov Manor does not get one of these. And a notably hated by me card, Edge of Eternities, Biosynthic Burst is the protection spell in Edge of Eternities. But this is two mana, not one mana, and it is indestructible, not hexproof, which I think bore out to be a massive difference with Exile, Bounce, top or bottom.
This isn't going to be relevant anymore because of the time shift, because of when we're recording. But you know what card has wrecked me in Secrets of Strixhaven this week? Is the three and a black exile a creature.
Yeah.
Like the exile has mattered so much. Like every time I've cast a Pathbrood Sloth, I think it's gotten exiled. Like just literally every single time I've cast it.
Yeah. It really does track. You're like, anything I'm hoping is going to get a death trigger, it's not happening.
Not happening.
Yeah, I did an Edge of Eternities draft when it was up for quick draft. And I think I sent you a screenshot of like my I like went to kill something and my opponent replied with Biosynthic Burst. I was like, bro, this is grav kill. It's getting exiled. Like, thanks for the extra 2-for-1. So Snakeskin Veil, Biosynthic Burst is not. The trends of the removal for green and black, it seems like set over set, these colors get about the same thing. There's a green brings a common fight or bite spell and an uncommon fight or bite spell. Black brings its usual suite of common removal of usually small, medium catch-all up the scale. The one thing that I wanted to throw out that I'm seeing when I look at black's removal is honestly, black's removal is better in the sets where green-black struggles. Like when I look at the removal suite of Stab, Bake Into a Pie, and Eaten Alive from Foundations, or Embrace Oblivion, Depressurize, and Grav Kill from Edge of Eternities, I'm much more excited about that than, say, looking at OTJ, where like Skullduggery didn't really matter. Desert's Dew was okay as like the -2/-2 that scaled. Consuming Ashes was the catch-all, and that was okay. But like, those were not the premium removal spells that some of the other ones on this list are. Well, what are you seeing as you look through this list?
It's hard to draw clear takeaways from the list. I mean, one of the things that I started to see was that in the tops, your green fight spells are pumping your creature's power. It's not necessarily true because of Runover, but at least then you can make it a single green if it's not that. But like in Foundations, Bite Down is just whatever your creature is, that's the damage it deals. In Edge of Eternities, Meltstrider's Resolve only pumps the toughness. It doesn't help it. Bite Down on Crime does give the +2/+2 from MKM, but frequently you're casting that for 4 mana instead of 2. And if you could make Bite Down on Crime 2 mana, like the green fight spells that pump power, definitely better than the ones that don't.
Right. Assert Perfection is probably the best on this list from Lorwyn Eclipsed. But yeah. Oh, and I guess maybe Throw from the Saddle as well from OTJ. That was like the top common in the set.
Both of those are 2 mana and provide a point of power pump.
Correct. And in Throw from the Saddle's case, sometimes a permanent pump. That was why it was so pushed there. But not a ton to draw. Like, you're sort of seeing the same things. A common and an uncommon in green. The small, medium catch-all in black's common removal. Couldn't quite That category sort of left me going, no trends here really for me to feel like I could draw any conclusions from.
But I don't think that's why. I don't ever feel like Black Green fails because of the removal, which does track with the overall thesis still. Black Green fails when it doesn't have a cohesive plan. Like, you're always going to be able to kill your opponent's stuff, but are you going to have a functional game plan of your own outside of the ability to kill stuff?
Right. The other thing that sort of surprised me, and I don't know how to extrapolate it to future sets, but when I was looking at, okay, let me look at black green on 17 lands and look at what the top commons and uncommons in this color pair were. Almost always, black green was borrowing from other colors in its top, 15 cards, sometimes 20 cards. And the quality of those was pretty stark in some instances. I think the biggest, like, whoa, you got to play these cards too, came in OTJ. In Outlaws of Thunder Junction, Black Green was splashing Shepherd of the Clouds a lot, which is the 4 and a white, 4/3 flying Vigi. When it enters, you return a thing with mana value 3 or less from your graveyard to your hand, or it goes to the battlefield instead if you control a mount. Like, Black Green getting another recursion piece that it could splash, plus just a couple good removal spells from white is what it borrowed. In Aether Drift, Black Green was often borrowing Stock Up if it could. It was borrowing a Thunderhead Gunner if it could, the 4 and a red, 4/5 reach that could rummage once a turn. Veteran Beast Rider, the 1 green-white, 3/4 that could pump your team. Like, if there were single pipped sort of just overarching good cards in the set, Black Green was often snatching them, which it was just interesting because I'm like, oh, Black Green, you just can't get it done on your own, can you? You got to steal from everybody else just to, like, compete. But in OTJ, it really made sense to me because I was like, oh, you're getting another Gravedigger. You're like, the redundancy of that deck is what I remember from that set. And then, like, in Foundations, what was Black Green splashing? It was splashing Burst Lightning a lot. Kind of wah-wah there. Dreadwing Scavenger, aka Smuggler's Copter. Like, yeah, it's a good card. Is that powerful of a splash?
No, and I think another takeaway from the top sets, you're seeing it splash more expensive and more impactful late game cards. Correct. In these sets that didn't work out, you're seeing it splash a lot cheaper, ineffective cards.
Right, it's like splashing Biomechan Engineer in Edge of Eternities, which is a great card and a great late game card, but you are effectively like splashing a 2-drop that provides fixing and ramp, which is awkward. And then you've got to make sure still, do I have 8 mana to dump into this the next turn? Like, whereas just casting Stock Up is incredible. Just casting Shepherd of the Clouds is incredible. You don't need to be like, let me cast it and let me untap and let me have 8 mana.
Right.
Yeah. So black green seems to succeed when both colors are in harmony, that's clear, but I think succeeds in supporting whatever this usually graveyard, this ethereal graveyard theme is. When both colors bring things to that game plan, it's going to succeed. I think the self-mill is one of the biggest things, and self-mill does not equal surveil is one of my biggest takeaways from looking at all of these sets.
I think another one is, do we have the quality of creature to support the quality of removal, right? Like, if you get the green creatures that are ahead of rate, maybe draw you a card like Sarulf's Packmate, a la that sort of thing. Like, yeah, that can be the body to leverage the removal plus the card advantage to keep the gas flowing that lets you play that attrition-y style game plan if you're not doing the graveyard stuff.
Yes. Not rocket science, but if black green's uncommons are busted, it does point to the color pair being good. And the more secret gold cards, the better. The more tools for the color pair to have all to itself, I think, is really good. Something like thinking about Patient Naturalist in Outlaws of Thunder Junction really highlights this of like, hey, is the color pair gonna get the support it needs versus something like black green and Edge of Eternities where it's like, Galactic Wayfarer would be great. It's like, yeah, everybody wants that card. That's not, you're not special. You're going to have to fight over every other green deck for that. patient naturalist less so, and it's going to more so support what Black Green is doing.
It's also one of the things that's coalescing for me here as far as takeaways, and I don't know that this is going to help us evaluate it better for future sets, but it does seem to be, and you said this in the overview, like either does very well or very poorly. It's frequently not in the middle.
Correct.
Which goes back to that green and black being diametrically opposed, and then also frequently on an island in relation to the other color pairs. And I wonder if there's a way to solve that problem, but you almost can't because green and black are so opposite, like big game, small game, etc. They have to then put it on an island to try to marry them, and mm-hmm. either like the island they put them on ends up being a really nice, beautiful island, great beach, good temperature, no rain, or like it's kind of a dump, like, and they like, it's very it's very hit or miss, you know.
Rent
what I mean?
Is low. It's very cheap.
Well, because they have to put it on its own island just to try to get the colors to work together.
Basically, my baseline after doing this episode, I'm like, okay, I'm gonna assume Black Green stinks. And the things I'm gonna look for Black Green to not stink are the things we're outlining here. How much self mill is there? Is there a grave digger? Are there any secret gold cards I'm seeing? Are there just like clearly busted, not only busted signposts, but are all of the signposts talking to each other? Are they all asking you to do the same thing and supporting the same kind of game plan? Like your highlight of the three signposts or the three gold cards from MKM is just so like, what is this doing? You know?
Well, can we also, while we're here and doing takeaways, can we do a debrief on Secrets of Strixhaven? Because I feel like Secrets of Strixhaven, the juice was there. Like when we were evaluating the cards, it felt like I truly thought Black Green was going to be the best after doing the spoiler from Secrets of Strixhaven. But I think the format ended up being so weird in terms of late game inevitability and powerhouse rares and stuff. But I remember my takeaways from spoiler season being, well, green black looks extremely well supported. Like it's got what looked to be great uncommons. It's got what looked to be some of the more powerful uncommons. It looks like it has cards that are at great rate. Like all the hallmarks we're talking about from this episode, I think were there for Secrets of Strixhaven. Like the life game thing was really cohesive and it had the pieces at common to support the life gain. It had the payoffs for the life gain. And yet, ultimately, it still felt pretty flat. One, because it didn't check the box of, like, it fell into the trap of easily disruptible by removal. And there is a lot of premium removal in Secrets of Strixhaven. Like, that was something that it definitely fell into the trap of, and it didn't, wasn't able to escape that. But the other one that's way harder to predict for Secrets of Strixhaven is the format is just extremely skewed towards either the extreme early game or the extreme late game. And Black Green is living in neither of those spaces very well.
Yeah, I mean, it's worth bringing up, like, how could we have, with these tools, could we have predicted Black Green? And it's hard because of the context you're talking about of, like, inherently, life gain as a theme says, I'd love the game to go long because I'm going to be gaining a bunch of life so I can hang the longer the game goes on. But the format is so... I don't know.
4-for-1, 6-for-1, 8-for-1.
That you're like, cool, you want the game to go long? I'd love that because I'm going to outvalue you. I don't actually care about your life total in that way. And maybe that's the thing, like, is life gain? Maybe is it possible to just be like, oh, life gain is not a good theme?
No, I don't think so.
No? But like, because I think gaining life is not enough. I'm gonna just throw this thesis out there to you on the fly. If you're saying I want to gain life to make the game go long, you have to then have a reason for the game to go long. And the reason for the game to go long cannot just be my pest mascot is a 7-8 now. Like that's not good enough. And Black Green doesn't have. I'm looking through this and I'm seeing. I don't really see a reason for the game to go long.
But I don't think Black Green did want, like when I looked at Black Green, it looked like a great mid-range A plus B synergy deck to me.
I think inherently mid-range and A plus B synergy are kind of at odds with each other. Because, like, mid-range is cabs. Mid-range is cards that affect the board, right? Mid-range is I'm just playing my value stuff. I'm doing my curve outs. And A plus B is, like, I'm assembling this thing that, like, does more than A and B separately. And I don't think gain life to get counters is good enough.
Like gain life to get overstatted creatures for their mana cost.
It's just not good enough when, like, okay, but then my kill spell still kills it.
That's definitely the trap that it fell into, is that the removal lines up extremely well against the Witherbloom deck.
Yeah. I think for life gain as a theme to be good. And that's why it's like, I'm looking through these cards. I'm like, the cards that stand out to me are just like the 3-mana 4/2 Trampler, not because it gains life when it attacks, but just because it's a good beater that wears counters from Cost of Brilliance pretty well, you know? Like,
but that's more a function of you knowing how the format works now. You would not have thought that card was one of the better cards during spoiler season, I don't think.
I would not. Well, it's like one of the better cards, air quotes, in a color pair that just largely doesn't work. And it'd be really interesting because this is coming out. Like, maybe everybody is screaming at their iPhone and their, you know, maybe black green is, you know, skirting all of these notions in the Marvel set right now. But I'm definitely going to, when we get to, you know, retroactively, we are in the past now, but whatever, we're in the future and we're going to do our crash course and we're going to be looking at black green in Marvel in preview season. I'm definitely going in being like, I assume black green won't be good, but the things I'm going to be looking for are these things. And if black green's theme, and I guess that's a maybe, if black green's theme is graveyard stuff, yeah, which it usually is. And if black green's theme is something else, maybe I need to look for some different kinds of cards. But I think life gain ain't it. Witherbloom going 0-2 in both Strixhaven sets is a pretty bad look for life gain matters.
I agree. But was I on an island thinking it had the juice? I thought you also thought it had the juice this time.
I liked your takes. I liked the ideas. I love gaining life. And as I said to you before at the start of the episode, I'm just inclined to like this color pair, and I don't know why. Maybe it's because, gaining life makes me feel good. But, I agree that it looked like all the tools were there. But maybe I got kind of trapped by, like, it's just cozy to be at 26 life.
But that wasn't the thing for me. I wasn't like, you're talking about it like you were attracted to the life gain theme. It just looked like it had great cards to me, like good rate cards, which I think has been our takeaway for, well, this color pair is going to be good. Like the gold uncommons, check. It had the gold commons, check. Like it had the best gold cards out of every color pair in spoiler season.
Maybe people smarter than us can figure out why
it had the concoctor. It had the first year, like it's gold commons, Bogwater Lumeret, and Grapple with Death. I think we probably underrated Render Speechless and Visionary's Dance.
Essence and Scholar was great, but like Lewin wasn't great. I think it's just because I'm like, cool, I have this 3/4, I have this repeatable way to make 1/1s. What are you doing with them? And it can't, like, black green is just gaining life with them. That's not good enough.
But there's a world where if black green is the top of the heap instead of in the middle of the heap, that Lewin's a great card. Like if it is a smaller ball format.
Yes. Right. If there aren't 18, I win the game in 7 turns cards at rare, then black green suddenly gets to be like, hey, the game goes long, I win.
That's what I was trying to say when I first brought this up. Like, I think green-black does have good cards. It just doesn't have insane cards, and there are a lot of insane cards in the format. Like, I think when we put green-black's cards on Quadrant Theory, I think they all pass Quadrant Theory, but there's like a fifth category in Secrets of Strixhaven that is uber-busted 4/1 in the late game, and
Theory.
It doesn't have one of those. Anyway, neither here.
What if Quadrant Theory is washed?
That's what I was trying to propose the other week with, like, are we the dinosaurs?
Oh, that. Yeah, we might be. But what's the new theory? We'll have to just ask the young hip kids.
Yeah.
Maybe it's like spectrum theory. Like not only with these colors being on opposite ends, but I'm thinking of like, this, it's just an outlier. Like Strixhaven and Tarkir Dragonstorm being so clearly like, there are two foundational poles to this format. But that doesn't always happen like that.
Right. Yes.
So it's hard to sort of extrapolate. But I do feel like I have some pretty clear heuristics and whatever ways that I'm going to come to a new set with to view black-green. And it feels a lot clearer than just like, ooh, Insidious Roots. That looks fun. Like, gonna try and quell that for myself.
Well, and I think specifically if it is green-black graveyard stuff, I feel like we have a very good idea of what to look out for. And I think more than anything, the takeaway for me is just that green and black, the idea that they're opposed, and then to get them to be a deck, they have to put them on an island. And is that island going to be good or bad?
Yeah.
And more often than not, the island is missing.
Yeah.
All right. Great place to wrap us up. Thank you, as always, to Salty Pretzels for our intro and outro music. Make sure you give it a listen.
You can find all of our content at lordsoflimited.com, links to our episode backlog, our YouTube channel, our Twitch streams, our merch, our Patreon page, all of that available at lordsoflimited.com.
If you've got any feedback about the show or any questions, shoot us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com.
Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week for another episode of Lords of Limited.
Thanks, everybody. See you later.